Alexander Haig was Secretary of State for the first 18 months of the Reagan administration, Supreme Allied Commander of NATO from 1974 to 79, and a deputy to National Security Advisor Henry Kissinger during the SALT II and ABM negotiations. Secretary Haig, who is now an announced presidential candidate, is with us from our affiliate, WMUR, in Manchester, New Hampshire. Ambassador Kenneth Edelman, who joins us now from WRAL in Raleigh, North Carolina, is director of the U.S. Arms Control and Disarmament Agency and has just returned from Geneva with Secretary of State Shultz. Alexander Haig, if we may begin with you, please. I gather you do not like this treaty for a number of reasons. Can you briefly run through what some of those are?
Well, there are about four all told. One is it doesn't even deal with the destabilizing nuclear equations today, and that's the Soviet Union's overwhelming superiority in first strike long-range ballistic missiles. That's where we should have focused. Secondly, it's been very unnerving to our friends in Western Europe, especially the West Germans, who now find that the only nuclear weapons remaining on the continent can be detonated over their territory. This is a great incentive for the ultimate neutralization of West Germany. Thirdly, it's been undertaken without the kinds of assurances associated with other Soviet activities around the world, especially Afghanistan and their support for wars of liberation in Angola and in Central America. These are all very important aspects of an arms control agreement, not just simply the elimination of launchers. And incidentally, at the outset of your program, you pointed out that there will be destruction of nuclear weapons. As I understand it, the warheads will be reverted to national control, and only the launchers will be destroyed.
Okay, if we can turn this for just a moment to the verification issue, which is one of the things in some of your writings you have pointed out you are not happy with. Can this treaty be adequately verified? Will the U.S. government be satisfied that we will know that the missiles have been destroyed?
Well, there are several worrisome aspects to this. Of course, in every arms control agreement, and I negotiated personally in the first SALT I and the ABM treaty, the Soviets did, in fact, violate those agreements almost from the time the ink dried on the agreements themselves. This same risk-taking is associated with this agreement. But what worries me is that we've also put a cap in the interest of verification on our ability to deploy precision-guided cruise missiles beyond the 500-kilometer range, which is a serious blow to our future conventional enhancement. Secondly, I'm rather concerned, and maybe Mr. Edelman can explain the New York Times story, which suggests that we're going to have Soviet inspectors looking at our MX facilities, and we're going to be looking at their SS-25 facilities. The latter I can understand. I don't know why the Soviet interest in our MX when it's Pershing 2s that we're destroying.
All right. Ken Edelman, you have been directly challenged. What about it? Are the Soviets going to be able to look at our MX missiles as well as the Pershings that are actually going to be banned?
The Soviets are going to look at everything that comes from a plant, that a final assembly plant that we have, as you had in the beginning of the show, in Utah. The purpose of that is quite simple, that we want to see if the Soviets are producing any SS-20s, and the Soviets want to see if we're producing any Pershings. My view of verification is quite simple. We have the Soviet Union, a closed society, the United States of America, an open society. Anytime that we have an equivalence right, we win, because the Soviets can read about our deployments and our missile systems in Aviation Week, or watch ABC News, or get just some publications here. I think, all in all, you have to strain to come up with objections to this treaty. And I think that the objections that Secretary Haig, for whom I have great respect, the objections that he has come up with are a strain, quite frankly.
Well, let's go to our verification issue here. Alexander Haig, I have not heard you really saying in any of your criticisms that this treaty cannot be verified. It is extraordinary in many aspects because it has so many different types of verification.
Well, first, let us be very careful that we not anchor our objections to this treaty solely on the hurdles of verification, as important as they are. And they are difficult, and they're going to take a great deal more trust than past experience with the Russians have suggested we can. But the most important aspect of this treaty, the real danger comes from its failure to deal with the destabilizing nuclear equation. And as Mr. Adelman knows, that his former mentor, Ambassador Kirkpatrick, Henry Kissinger, President Nixon, Brent Scowcroft, Al Haig, and today the New York or the London-based Jane's publication have all come out expressing severe concerns, and they're primarily in the political area. Where we're getting a pettifogging is the remarks of the Vice President at Houston when he said our grandchildren will want to know how many nuclear weapons we destroyed. That's the wrong question for the wrong reason. What they'll want to know is how many wars we prevented. And this is what is being put in jeopardy by this arms control agreement.
Ken Edelman?
Well, I don't believe that's being put in jeopardy by this arms control agreement at all. I think it's quite easy to see, as we saw at the beginning of this program, that first of all, we are going to destroy about a third or a fourth the number of nuclear weapons that the Soviets are going to destroy. But we're going to eliminate an entire class of weapon systems. The verification is going to be the most intense, the most intrusive that we've ever had in arms control. And thirdly, this is an arms control agreement on our terms. SALT I and the ABM treaty that were negotiated in the Nixon administration were agreements basically for a variety of reasons that very much went very far to accommodate Soviet concerns. This is the outline of the treaty that when Alexander Haig was Secretary of State, he went around and talked to the Allies about. So here we are 7 years later with the Soviets coming around and saying, okay. And we're, according to Alexander Haig, not able to take yes for an answer. I think that's strange.
All right, we're going to take again our Alexander Haig in Manchester, New Hampshire, and Kenneth Edelman in Raleigh, North Carolina. Before we took our break, Mr. Haig, Ken Edelman was pointing out that when you were Secretary of State, you did go around and try to sell an INF agreement. What's your comment?
That's precisely the opposite from the truth. Of course, Ken would have no way of knowing since he wasn't involved during those first 18 months in the areas that we're discussing. I was opposed to the single zero option put forth by the Pentagon, which the President approved very early on in the administration. At that time, I was opposed to it for two real reasons. First was, I said, if you could get it, you wouldn't want it. It was a first step towards a nuclear-free zone in Europe, which the Russians have wanted since the days of the Rapaki plan in the early 50s. The second reason was that we hadn't even deployed the Pershing 2s, which is the main system that concerns the Soviet Union. And the removal of those Pershing 2s removes the only real ballistic threat based in Europe, which adds credibility to the American guarantee to our European allies of our involvement in a Soviet attack on them, which has made this whole thing a great deal of a charade. Now, so we will not waste too much time, and I think the record's very clear on where I stood. We had several cabinet meetings, which Mr. Adelman did not participate in, and I'm not sure that he has in too many subsequently. But be that as it may, this has gone too far, and I'd be the first to admit that if the United States were now to junk this treaty after the travails of SALT II, why, we would have a credibility gap with our friends in Europe who've taken great risks to go along, and after great pressure from us to do so, to go along with this treaty. But we have to correct the deficiencies that are in it by suggesting to the Soviets that we are going to carry out our end of the bargain in good faith, providing we get some assurances on the correction of the Soviet first strike superiority that they enjoy today. That means reductions in central strategic systems, and primarily in the SS-18s, 19s, 24s, and 25s. It also means that we should have some guarantees on getting a greater balance on the conventional forces in Western Europe, which are now being asked to carry a tremendous burden despite their inferiority. And it's ludicrous for members of the administration to suggest that the Europeans can match the conventional capabilities of the Soviets. West Germany today has almost 500,000 men under arms. They are at the exact ultimate limit of the demographics of their youth to be able to meet those force goals.
Okay. Mr. Haig, let's let Ken Edelman have a chance to get in here and try and deal with some of the things.
Well, he deserves one.
Go ahead.
Just to correct the record, Alexander Haig was right in one sense. I was sitting next to him in the cabinet room when he did come out against the zero option in October, I believe it was, of 1981. The fact is that he went around for the consequent following year to follow the president's directive and to say that this approach was the right approach for INF. But now, on this interview for the first time, I'm a little confused on Al Haig's position, because I thought he was just dead set against the treaty. If he's dead set against the treaty, then obviously he thinks that the Senate should vote it down. And if the Senate votes it down, I think that you're going to find some consequences that he's not going to like very much. One, he mentioned the ungluing of the alliance, because if he says, which I haven't heard, but if he says that some of the allies are unnerved by this treaty, you should see them be unnerved by our not following through when the Soviets accept the alliance proposal. Also, the Senate does not ratify this treaty. If Ronald Reagan, the most conservative president since World War II, cannot get a treaty ratified on American terms from 1981, then I don't think any president can get any arms control agreement ratified. And lastly, it's ironic to me that Alexander Haig, who's running so hard for the presidency, wants to diminish the powers of the presidency so much, because it's usually the Democrats who want to restrict the presidency on war powers legislation and phony arms control legislation, and it's usually the Republicans who want a vigorous presidency. And here, if we cannot follow through as a government in supporting what the president has wanted since 1981, I think the office of the president is going to be very shrunken, and it's going to be too small to be quite desirable or very important in the world. And
Mr. Haig, it does sound as though you are slightly on both sides of the issue, that you oppose the treaty, yet you do want it to be ratified.
I wouldn't say slightly on both sides.
Absolutely not.
You come out four square?
That's nonsense. The presidential office is not going to shrink because we do the right thing. It's going to shrink when we do the wrong thing. You know, this is hogwash. What I have said was that, of course, we can go ahead with a ratification provided the Soviet Union meets some conditions. Mr. Edelman just got finished accepting Soviet conditions put on after the agreement was essentially arrived at in principle, which required the West Germans to remove the Pershing ones, which had nothing to do with the agreement.
That's not part of this treaty at all.
No, of course not. Oh, come on now, Ken. We're all in the business together. It is being done in association with this treaty, and you know it, and I know it, and so do the West Germans, because I've spoken to them about it.
Okay.
With us again now are Alexander Haig and Kenneth Edelman. Gentlemen, I'd like to ask both of you, why do you think Mikhail Gorbachev and Ronald Reagan were able to come to this agreement after so many years of basically being stalemated? We'll begin with you, Ken.
Well, I think that Gorbachev wanted the treaty more than we did, which is fine. And we were willing to wait and negotiate one day longer than they were. I think what they want to do is to get a situation where the political momentum of this agreement is such to decouple our interests from those of Western Europe. I have no doubt about that, and I don't disagree with Al Haig from that. That comes about not because of the terms of the agreement, which are awfully good, but it comes about by Americans going around speaking, quote, on behalf of Europe, saying that even though the Europeans favor this agreement and in the leadership positions of their government, that really they're not for it.
Okay. Mr. Haig?
Well, that's nonsense, Ken. The facts are that the Europeans are greatly unnerved by this treaty. But they're also like we are. They can't be opposed to arms control any more than President Reagan can be opposed to arms control. The facts are that this is a giant step towards the long-term objectives of the Soviet Union, a nuclear-free zone in Western Europe. And it'll only be a matter of months or perhaps a year or two before they come in with the next proposal, and that is to take out the even shorter-range systems, and they will have accomplished their goal. This is absolutely putting the horse before the cart. And incidentally, while I was Secretary of State, our focus was on correcting the imbalances in central strategic systems, not negotiating an INF, which was given its birth in the walk in the woods by Paul Nitze, your colleague, and which at that time the president pulled away from and rejected.
Mr. Haig,
when
we
got into it because we failed to deploy the MXs that we should have, that we had to create SDI to fill that gap, and that in creating SDI, we held arms control hostage to an INF treaty.
Thank you.
And that's precisely where it happened.
Thank you, General Haig. Ken Edelman, I'm sorry we have run out of time. It looks as though we are not going to solve this one tonight. That's our report for this evening. For all of us here at ABC News, I'm John McQuethy. I hope you had a happy Thanksgiving. Good night.